Hello, I'm Richard Burrell. This is number 0333, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0333. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, actor Anson Williams, best known as Potsy Weber on Happy Days. He's the co-author of The Perfect Portion Cookbook.
We thought, well, what if you could eat what you love and never overeat? And I saw all these 100-calorie portion snacks or whatever in the stores. And I thought, what if we can get 150 of the world's favorite comfort foods? Everything from apple turnovers to French toast to lasagna to chili to chocolate-colored pretzels to cheesecake. What if we could have those recipes to eat in perfect 100-calorie portions?
Marty Essen, a travel writer, has a new book out. It's entitled Endangered Edens.
The last book was all seven continents. This time we narrowed it down to four what I call endangered Edens, places that are wonderful as far as is environmentally, lots of wildlife, that sort of thing, but also are endangered by human encroachment. And so where we went to was Puerto Rico. Probably the biggest and best trip was up to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is one of the most remote areas in the world. Went down to the Everglades, and then ended up with a wonderful adventure down in Costa Rica.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Among other things, he talks about the increased cases of groping on the subway.
New York City subways are squashed. You know, when you go into them during rush hour, you're really standing right up against somebody who just ate a garlic pizza. So it's almost hard. And, you know, I mean, anytime I go on the subway, and I do, I'm kind of terrified to make sure that I'm keeping my hands, you know, really away from anybody, because I don't want to have an accident. But I will tell you this, if you ever, you know, are coming to New York City and you don't feel loved, I'd suggest that you go ride the subway during rush hour.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0333, was Richard Burrell, founder of VoxBox Canada, which offers professional voice recording, voicemail, and messages on hold. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which you just heard Richard mention, 0333, and you'll find the links to VoxBox Canada. Thank you very much, Richard, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, seriously, someone has to do something and test the environs of Florida, because weird stories coming out of the Sunshine State are just too bizarre. When you think you've seen and heard it all, new ones come down the pike that tops previous stories. For instance, and please, follow closely the chain of events in this latest Floridian tale. Okay? You ready? So, imagine you are an older married woman. You're 72 years old. You come home to find a young woman who is all of 22 in your husband's pajamas sleeping in your bed. Logic would dictate that your husband is cheating on you, but remember, this is Florida. When you confront the woman, she tells you that she was only sleepwalking and doesn't remember wandering into your house, showering, changing into your husband's pajamas, and climbing into your bed. So you decide that just to get her out of the house, you will give her a ride home. Okay, so as I said, this is Florida. Weird things happen all the time. But wait a minute, I haven't gotten to the weird part yet. As it turns out, the young woman, a woman by the name of Erin Rice, was not having an affair with the elderly gentleman. She was fleeing police. Now, earlier that day, she was observed shoplifting several $100 worth of cosmetics from a CVS pharmacy in Deltona, Florida. Rice was apprehended outside the pharmacy by a sheriff's deputy who managed to half arrest her. He cuffed one of her wrists before Rice pushed him to the ground and took off running. Now, Rice randomly headed to a house in the neighborhood. She slipped inside, washed her clothes in the washing machine, but left a pair of socks and panties, took a shower, put on a pair of the flannel pajamas she found, and then napped in the bedroom where she was found by the homeowner. Are you still with me? Okay. You can just imagine the telephone call between the elderly woman, whose name, by the way, is Carol Rausch, and her husband when Rice was discovered wearing handcuffs on one wrist, no less. But no story that poor old guy James Rausch could have come up with could possibly beat the truth. Later that day, the older couple flagged down deputies and asked them if they were looking for a young woman. The couple told deputies where they had driven the woman, and when deputies went to the house, they arrested Rice and an accomplice who attempted to flee. Okay, so as I said in the beginning, only in Florida. But let's take away a positive from this story, shall we? Carol was clearly duped by Aaron, who, may I remind you, was wearing handcuffs on one wrist. This was a woman who was extremely kind and caring, not jumping to what could easily be obvious conclusions about her husband, and then she drove the woman to her home. Carol has got to be the nicest woman in the world. But I do have to ask, if she bought the sleepwalking story, what did she think about the handcuffs? Yeah. Anyway. Moving right along, we are not done with Florida, by the way. A Florida man dressed in a French maid costume and a dog collar was one of 95 people arrested in a prostitution sting. Do I have to repeat that? Yeah, let me repeat that. A Florida man dressed in a French maid costume and a dog collar was one of 95 people arrested in a prostitution ring. The Polk County Sheriff's Office said an investigation dubbed Operation Naughty But Nice resulted in the arrests of 95 people between the ages of 15 and 68 during the week-long sting. Investigators and the suspects were lured to a hotel by undercover officers posing as prostitutes and potential customers. The arrest report said one of the suspects, David Marsh, arrived at the hotel on a bicycle, wearing the French maid costume, and yes, a dog collar, and oh, added to that, a chastity belt. He was wearing a chastity belt. Yeah, he was seeking a prostitute to dominate him, investigators say. He rode a bike clear across Lakeland wearing his French maid outfit and a dog collar around his neck, said Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd in a news conference. The sheriff's office said other suspects arrested in the sting included a Lakeland High School teacher, two sets of twins, and a mother who left her two-year-old child in the car with her significant other when she came into the hotel. Judd said one of the suspects, Maurice Laws, was previously arrested in a similar operation at the same hotel last year. Wow, some people never learn, do they? As for the guy in the French maid outfit, he rode clear across Lakeland on a bike in his getup. But you know, because it's Florida, I'm guessing no one batted an eyelash at that one. Yeah. Off to China. Officials in a Chinese city ordered a restaurant to stop charging customers to breathe clean air amid intense smog in the country. The restaurant in Zhangjiagang was found to be adding an air cleaning fee of about 15 cents to each customer's bill to offset the cost of the eatery's new air filtration system, which was installed amid smog warnings in the region. Customers complained to the city's Consumer Pricing Bureau, which ordered the restaurant to cease the practice. An official told a state-run Xinhua news agency, the filtered air could not be sold as a commodity because diners were not given the option of whether or not to breathe inside the facility. I didn't realize that was a choice, but anyway. Smog in the capital, Beijing, was so thick a couple of weeks ago that the city issued its first ever red alert for air quality. The alert involved a three-day closing of factories, construction sites, and schools. Now, I don't know what's funnier, the idea that a restaurant could charge for fresh air, or a ruling by the officials which stated that diners were not given the option of whether or not to breathe inside the facility. Yes. Now we've learned, according to at least the Chinese government, breathing apparently is voluntary. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the Angelina County Sheriff's Office in Lufkin, Texas, reported responding to a 911 call about shots fired at a home on November 8th, but made no arrest. The male resident was sitting in his pickup, admittedly drunk, and having listened to a sad song on his favorite radio station, when, of course, he pulled out a .22 caliber pistol and shot the radio. According to the report, the suspect's wife took possession of the handgun and the suspect. Yeah. Well, isn't that a country and western cliche come to life? The only thing missing in this story is a dog. Let's get to our first guest, shall we? Anson Williams is best known for his role as Patsy Weber on the iconic sitcom Happy Days. Since that show's historic run, Williams has gone on to be an award-winning television director, writer, producer, and entrepreneur. And with a new book, he has also ventured into the kitchen. He, along with Bob Warden and Mona Dolgov, are the authors of The Perfect Portion Cookbook, which will be launched on QVC on Super Bowl Sunday. To talk about the book and catch up a bit, we are joined by Anson Williams, who is on the line from California. Hi, Anson.
Hi there.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
So this book, the Perfect Portion Cookbook, it seems like a dream come true. The idea that you can still eat the things you love, the idea also being just do it proportionally, correct?
Exactly. But because getting along in years, you know, I was so tired of, like, Weight Watchers and a calorie count where you need to be a physicist to figure it out, you know, and food you don't love. And my business partner and I, Joanna Cannell, we thought, well, what if you could eat what you love and never overeat? And I saw all these 100-calorie portion snacks or whatever in the stores, and I thought, what if we can get 150 of the world's favorite comfort foods, everything from apple turnovers to French toast to lasagna to chili to chocolate-colored pretzels to cheesecake. What if we could have those recipes to eat in perfect 100-calorie portions? So basically, you get an entree, and you know exactly how to count. Oh, one portion 100, two portion 200, three portion 300, and food you love to eat. So we went to Bob Warden, who's very, very famous in the food area, been on QVC for years and years and years, and Mona Dolgov, and they together came up with 150 of the most delicious recipes, pizza, you know, chicken piccata, apple pies, apple turnovers, you name it, and made a little healthier with amazing taste, delicious, all in perfect 100-calorie portions. And there's a little graph there where you can see exactly what each piece is. No-brainer, because now you can eat what you love and never overeat and know exactly what your calorie count is. It's called The Perfect Portion Cookbook. And if you go to theperfectportion.com, we have an entire holiday dinner there. Turkey, garlic mashed potatoes, gravy, cheesecakes, all in perfect 100-calorie portions.
That's amazing. Now, one of the things that people complain about sometimes, I mean, you are a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
You have worked your life, at least the early part of your life, in front of the camera. You were on Happy Days. And for that reason alone, actors have to watch what they eat and how they do it. They have to live that type of regime, which is something that the rest of us don't have to do. Maybe we should, but we don't
do. The obesity problem, at least in America,
yeah,
is horrendous. And, you know, I don't like, and I'm the guinea pig. I don't want diets. I want to live my life. I want to eat foods I love. Eating is a big deal. And you want great-tasting foods. But I don't want to get sick. I want to stay healthy. That was the purpose of this book. Not just for an actor being on camera. Right now, I look better than I have since I was 30. I mean, I am in shape, all from portion control, all from this book, not denying myself anything, only controlling what I eat, knowing what I eat, and I am so satisfied. It is so delicious. But everyone has to take control of their life. And this is a book that will not only give you the food you love, but help you never overeat and give you an exact, easy calorie count so you know what you're putting in.
And I've seen recent pictures of you. And to make us all feel old, you want to share your age with us?
Yeah, I'm 66.
Wow.
and now that picture, was it after 8 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just me at my warehouse, and I'm 66. That's the result of the Perfect Portion Cookbook. Not denying myself anything. I am like in the best shape I've been in my life.
Was there a time in your life where things were difficult? And by that I mean our metabolism at a certain age slows down, and we can't
totally
eat the way we used to before that. So, after that, I should say. So was there a time period when you realized, oh, wait a minute, I've got to be extra careful now because my metabolism has slowed down?
Oh, totally. And looking at when my father was alive, I mean, we're not naturally skinny in our family. You know, we don't have that great metabolism. I had to watch it. And I wasn't feeling that well. And I have four daughters at home still. And I got to be happening, man. I got to be up. I got to be healthy. And it started me thinking. And that's how this all came about. Because I didn't want to go on a diet. I didn't want to deny myself delicious food. I just wanted to easily control what I ate and still be satisfied. And that's the reason. So really, it was my health started it, and boy, does it work. So we're able to have 150 of the most delicious comfort foods, from key lime pie to fried chicken to pizza, all in perfect 100-calorie portions. So it's easy for the consumer to pick. They want 300 of this, they want 100 of this. And we have these little cheesecakes that you'll see on the website at theperfectportion.com, these amazing cheesecakes that are so satisfying. 100 calories each. 10 chocolate pretzels, 100 calories. I mean, amazing what you can eat, amazing how delicious, and amazing the low-calorie count.
Wow. Now, we should mention once again the website, theperfectportion.com. Plus, I also said in the introduction that it'll be launched on QVC on Super Bowl Sunday. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, yeah, Super Bowl Sunday, about 6 hours before the Super Bowl, we're launching the book on QVC. So we're going to show all these great Super Bowl recipes. But by the way, if you go to theperfectportion.com now, there's a link there to QVC. You'll save $10 off the book if you pre-order now.
Excellent. So again, that's theperfectportion.com. Now, I'd be remiss if we didn't catch up a little bit and talk a little bit about what you're doing besides this book, The Perfect Portion Cookbook. You are
right.
So busy. As I mentioned in the introduction, you're a television director, writer, producer, and entrepreneur. Uh-huh. Did you see the writing on the wall early in your career? Because, you know, there's a lot of actors who have gone off into directing. Some of your co-stars have gone off to be very successful directors. Some people have moved behind the camera. Was that always something you wanted to do?
Very early on. You start off as an actor, and I pretty much saw my limitations pretty quickly. and I always loved writing and creating. So very early on, I wanted to get behind the camera. And Gary Marshall, you know, our boss, our mentor on Happy Days, was very, very instrumental in giving me the opportunity to follow directors around the Paramount lot, to really learn other areas of the business. He was instrumental. Paramount Studios was like a college for me, and he made that work. So I was able to take advantage of Happy Days beyond just the show and really learn a lot of other areas of the business. And in fact, the first film I ever got produced was for NBC. Ron Howard directed it. It was called Skyward. I wrote the story, and starring Betty Davis. And that was the beginning.
Wow.
And I started producing and writing, and then finally got behind the camera in 1985. And I've been fortunate since. Ron has a huge, huge feature career, and I've been fortunate to have a pretty good television career directing.
Now, you mentioned Gary Marshall. People, are, of course, are familiar with his work. But he's also done a lot of work in front of the camera as well. I bring that up because do you find it makes you a better director having been an actor?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, incredibly. It's a great tool to have because you understand actors. You understand the process. You understand how to get in their head. You know what to do, what not to do. You're just more sensitive. You know, and performance and script is everything. And you have to be able to communicate. And as an actor, talking to an actor, it's a real asset. You know, it's funny. I got to direct Gary Marshall as an actor in Sabrina. Is that funny?
Wow.
I actually got to direct Gary. How is that for a turnaround? I come. He makes my career from nowhere. And years later, I'm able to direct my hero.
That's amazing. So
besides
this cookbook, again, The Perfect Portion Cookbook, and people can go to the website, theperfectportion.com. Besides having that coming out, and we also mentioned it's launched on QVC on Super Bowl Sunday, and people can go to the website and find out more information. What other things are you working on that we can perhaps see some of your work, either from a writing, directing, or producing point of view?
Well, right now, it's funny. We've got a few shows that we've packaged that we're selling to the networks. We're pretty much in development right now. And so they should be out, you know, we'll see pretty shortly what's going on. And then we're very involved, you know, in the product business. I mean, the cookbook's one thing, but we've been in the product business for 17 years. And, in fact, we were on QVC for 10 years in the beauty area. So I'm very involved in commerce. Mm. And then very involved with, you know, four daughters at home. And then, very interesting, Don Most, Henry Winkler, and I put together a show called Happy Days Live for fun. And starting in the summer, we're going to be touring around the country, and I think Canada, too. We're going to do a Happy Day show where I sing the songs I sang on the show. Donnie's a great performer. Henry's going to host the show. So we're going to have this great, you know, kind of back to the good time show starting this summer.
Excellent. Well, we've had Donnie on the program before, and we talked about his singing as well, so that sounds like it's going to be a great show. One last question.
Yeah, Donnie's fantastic, big bad singer.
Yeah.
But we're going to join together for just in this harsh world today, we're just going to bring people back to Arnold's for an hour, back to those times, back to, you know, that camaraderie around the television set, just a fun family show for everybody.
Literally and figuratively, back to Happy Days.
Yes, exactly.
I just want to ask one more quick question. From your perspective as someone who is, again, producer, writer, and director, do you find nowadays that this could be a new kind of golden age of television from a creative point of view, what with the many outlets that are available, both online and streaming, that give you opportunity to work literally on a project from the ground up and have a little more control?
Totally. I mean, thank goodness for Amazon and Netflix and Hulu. You know, it just broke it open. I mean, it's some of the best written, wonderful material that really contribute. I think that it's great material that's worthwhile, and it's just a pleasure to have that opportunity now. You know, as a viewer.
Right. Well, Anson, it's been a pleasure to talk to you again. We should mention the book, The Perfect Portion Cookbook. The website.
With the 100-calorie count.
With the 100-calorie count, and the website is theperfectportion.com. Anson, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Really, really appreciate it.
Anson Williams. Again, the book is called The Perfect Portion Cookbook, and the website is theperfectportion.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0333, and you'll find links to their website, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Endangered Edens. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We, of course, have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, but right now we have much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And according to the flabbergasted sheriff of rural Chesterfield County, South Carolina, this has completely changed our definition of what constitutes an assload of guns. I love that terminology, an assload of guns. 51-year-old Brent Nicholson had been storing more than 7,000 firearms, most of them likely stolen, in his home and a storage building on his property. Every room of the house was stacked with weapons, and it took four tractor-trailer trips to haul everything away, with help from 100 law enforcement officers. Nicholson also had 500 chainsaws and at least 250 taxidermy deer, elk, and alligator heads, and more. No motive was obvious to the deputies. Nicholson would still be living in the shadows today if he hadn't run that stop sign back on October 21st with bogus license plates on his truck. You see, it always starts with either bogus license plates or a suspended or no license at all. A tip to criminals out there listening to this, get proper driving credentials. Seriously. Moving right along, 26-year-old Brandon Wilson was arrested in November in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, his second bust of 2015, in which a substantial number of crack cocaine baggies were found in his rectum. 51 were recovered this time, counting the ones with marijuana, down from the 109 discovered in his backside in a February arrest. Police in November also found $1,700 in cash on him, but just in his pocket. Yes. We should start calling him the human fanny pack. And no matter what you call him, he is the butt of all jokes. A man driving through Apopka, Florida, spotted three packages on the front porch of a home. Security camera footage shows him backing into the driveway, getting out to make two trips to load the packages into his car, and driving away. When police stopped 28-year-old Jordani LaCourse, he explained to officers that taking the packages was like it was meant to be. The officers explained that he was under arrest for burglary. Then LaCourse declared, "That was also meant to be." I guess the bottom line here is he's meant to be in jail. And in a story with a similar vein in Polk County, Florida, the sheriff there, Sheriff Grady Judd, says a burglary suspect's actions are disgusting after seeing her crimes on hidden security cameras. The resulting video was posted on Facebook and it went viral. Now, in the video, the woman can be seen walking into a Lakeland house and stealing gifts meant for the homeowner's 2-year-old daughter. The victims, who were at home at the time, are a police officer and his wife, the suspect, Dana Hager, a neighbor, and a police officer's wife herself. Hager is already on probation for shoplifting, Judd said. He also goes on to say, "The fact that she's a cop's wife is shocking. The fact that she stole from another cop's wife is also shocking. And then my wife saw it on Facebook and knew more about it than I did." Hager allegedly returned the gifts in the middle of the night after opening them and apparently not finding the contents of interest. "Here's a word for Hager and porch pirates who steal gift deliveries," Judd said. "We're going to put you in jail, and you'll stay in our jail where you won't need any presents." Yeah. He's making a list. He's checking it twice. He's going to find out who's naughty and nice. Sheriff Judd is cleaning up the town. Whew. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Santa Claus is known for entering through chimneys, but British police said a not-so-jolly St. Nick climbed into a KFC drive-through window and demanded cash. The police said the bad Santa was armed with a large knife instead of a sack of toys when he climbed through the drive-through window at the KFC in Alfreton, England, and demanded access to the eatery safe. A police spokesperson said staff quite rightly backed off and allowed him that, and he then exited the scene with a quantity of money. KFC said no one was hurt during the incident, and employees are being offered any support they need. Now, I'm guessing that either the drive-through windows at KFC in the UK are larger, or the Santas there are smaller, because sometimes you can barely get some people's orders out through those tiny drive-through windows. And this story reminds me, next November, Billy Bob Thornton is back in Bad Santa 2. You've been warned. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Several years ago on the old radio show, we spoke to Marty Essen. That was when his book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, Exploring the Seven Continents, came out. Well, he now has a new book that is just coming out called Endangered Edens. And Marty joins us on the line right now from Montana. Hi, Marty.
Hey, Peter. Great to talk with you again.
Nice to talk to you again, too. Now, we had you back on the old radio show a couple of times, and back then, is when you're, as I mentioned, it's when your first book came out. Since then, you've become quite the college hit, as the saying goes, touring and talking about the things you've described and experienced in your book.
Well, yeah, my first book, Cool Creatures, Hot Planet, I turned it into kind of a live stage show. It's kind of a slideshow, but with a lot of action. And I've been performing that at colleges across the United States now. This is my ninth year of doing it, and I'm just having a blast. And now, finally, you know, that's kind of why I had this big delay between books, but now I've got a new book coming out, Endangered Edens, which is coming out real quickly, and I'm really excited about it.
So tell us about the new book, Endangered Edens.
Well, basically what we did, and by we, I mean my wife and I, we traveled to four different places this time. The last book was all seven continents. This time we narrowed it down to four what I call Endangered Edens, places that are wonderful as far as environmentally, lots of wildlife, that sort of thing, but also are endangered by human encroachment. And so where we went to was Puerto Rico. Probably the biggest and best trip was up to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is one of the most remote areas in the world. Went down to the Everglades, and then ended up with a wonderful adventure down in Costa Rica.
Now, were these some of the places you had visited before in your with your previous book?
Well, no. These were places, you know, as a travel author, I always have places, you know, that I want to see in the future. And Puerto Rico was kind of, we had just finished traveling all seven continents, and we kind of wanted just to go to a place where we get away. And as I call it, as the chapter is called in my book, Puerto Rico Herpin, or I thought this was a girl trip. And so where that comes from is my wife wanted just to have it, you know, kind of lie on the beach and have a place where we could go where we actually had flush toilets. And I wanted to look for reptiles. And the short word for that is herpin, looking for reptiles. And so we kind of combined that trip, and it turned into a wonderful adventure. And then, you know, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is an area that has been fought over by politicians for years and years. And the reason it's fought over so much is conservative politicians want to put in oil companies, let the oil companies go up there and drill in the Arctic Refuge. People who are more environmentally oriented, want to protect the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. It's one of the few places left in the United States where you've got this great wilderness untouched by humans. And so what we did is we flew up to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which isn't an easy place to get to. You got to fly into Fairbanks, Alaska, and then you get on this little teeny plane that takes you over the Brooks Mountains, and then you drop down onto the Arctic coastal plain. And we have an airplane with actual special tires that are kind of balloon tires, so when it lands gently and doesn't disturb the tundra. And then we canoed all the way to the Arctic Ocean. And it was just an incredible experience to be in this wide open place where very few people have ever visited, and see all the wonderful wildlife. And then we fly back to Fairbanks, Alaska, rent a car, and take the Dalton Highway all the way up to Prudhoe Bay where the oil companies are. And so as far as is as far north. There, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and Prudhoe Bay are basically at the same distance north, but the Prudhoe Bay oil field is about 120 miles to the west of the Arctic Refuge. And we could really see the difference in the environment, where you've got the oil companies and you've got all this pollution and everything. And it was really quite the shocking experience to have this compare and contrast between this wonderful wilderness and this cesspool, which is Prudhoe Bay.
Well, comparing and contrasting is why I asked you the question if you had gone back to places you had been before, because I was wondering if there was any change, even though it's a relatively short period of time in an ecosystem with what you had seen before and what you're seeing now. But as you just described, you can see the difference where things are untouched and where man has trotted over, as you say.
Exactly, and you know, there are some places like the like Antarctica. I would love to go back and you know, to kind of see the change, because you know, as the farther you get to the north or the farther you get to the south at the two poles, that's really where you see, like, for a lot of the global warming changes, because it's just more prevalent up there than it might be in, say, the center of the United States.
What's it like for you when you and your wife Deb come back home? I mean, to so-called civilization. Do you prefer the journeys that you take, or are you glad to be back, you know, amongst the rest of us, as the saying goes?
Well, there's always a little of both, but I think you always get that post-trip depression, you know, because it is always just great to be out in places where very few people have been. And you miss the flesh toilet, especially when, you know, out and when we were in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Not only, you know, of course, are there no bathroom or any facilities whatsoever, because humans just don't go up there very often, but it's an incredibly flat land. And so it was my wife and I, there was another woman with us and a couple of other guys. And that was always one of the challenges. You know, what if you had to go to the bathroom? I mean, it's just totally flat wherever you look. And so that was kind of a challenge sometimes. You know, you never really had privacy while you were up there, because you could see for miles.
As I mentioned, you are on the college circuit a lot, and
yes.
Your new book coming out, Endangered Edens, I mean, right there in the title is the word endangered. I'm just curious to know, when you travel around to the schools, when we're talking about, you know, the next generation and the future of this planet, do you find that there is a connection, there's definitely an interest in working towards saving what is left of this planet?
Well, yeah, there definitely is, and that's one of the reasons why I do it, because, you know, when global warming, if we don't do something, when it really gets bad, you know, I'm going to be at the age where it may not matter to me, but it's going to matter to my son and to my granddaughter and, you know, into future generations. And, you know, it's these, and I don't like to use the word kids, but these young adults that are coming up through college, these are the people that are not only going to face those challenges of global warming, but they're also, I think, the people, because they're coming to voting age right now, are going to have a big impact, too, on having a say about, you know, what planet they are going to inherit.
Now, you haven't been doing travel, but what led you to this in the first place?
Well, you know, what led me to it was, we live in Montana, my wife and I, and we run a small independent phone company, and we had just gone years and years without taking a vacation. And I had written for magazines and newspapers before, and one of the local newspapers out here in Montana found out when I was heading down to the Amazon that I was, and they asked me if I would write a story about my trip to the Amazon. And I wrote that story, and later on, if I'd be in a supermarket or in a restaurant or something, people would come up to me and say, "Wow, we love that story. Are you going to write another one?" And so we went to Australia, and the same thing happened with a couple feature stories in newspapers, and people coming up to me and saying how much they loved what I wrote. So, you know, that's kind of how the first book started. We ended up doing all seven continents. And, you know, that book was successful. And, you know, you don't want to be, you know, just like a musician, you don't want to be a one-hit band. You know, I didn't want to be a one-book author. And so this book, this really fast. And the difference with this one versus my first one is this one is a lot more photo-oriented. My last book had about 80 photos in it, but they were fairly small. This new book, Endangered Edens, I had so many people that requested more photos. So we've kind of made it into a hybrid coffee table book / travel adventure book. And so it's small and light enough that it's easy to pick up and read, but it's got glossy paper, so the photos really jump out. Very photo-intensive book. It's got some great photos in it, and so that's kind of how I've done this one a little bit differently.
Could it also be considered a sort of how-to guide? Could people retrace your footsteps if they were so daring to do so?
Well, absolutely. You know, and I also have on my website, some of the people we worked with. So, people are reading in my book, they want to, well, how do I get there? They go to my website, which is just my name, martyessen.com, MartyEssen.com. And, they can find information on who we traveled with if they want to do the same thing.
Excellent. The new book is called Endangered Edens, and you also just mentioned the website, martyessen.com. Marty, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
It's been great talking to you again, Peter. Thank you so much.
Marty Essen, author of Endangered Edens. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0333, and you'll find links to Marty's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In January of 1776, the great American patriot Thomas Paine published a short pamphlet called Common Sense that helped spark the American Revolution. This January, as we think about our goals for the coming year, it's useful to revisit this historic document and hear what Paine told his fellow colonists. In his opening paragraph, Paine wrote, and I quote, "A long habit of not thinking a thing wrong gives it a superficial appearance of being right, and raises at first a formidable outcry in defense of custom." End of quote. In today's language, what Paine was saying is that it's easy to lose sight of how wrong something is when it becomes an everyday part of one's life. Let's be fair, frivolous lawsuits have become such an everyday part of American life that it's easy to lose sight of how much they cost us by increasing the cost of everything from health insurance to consumer products. Instead of defending the status quo, let's think about how we can improve things. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabbie, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And a belated Happy New Year to you, sir, in NYC. Hello, Mr. Franklin.
Hello, hello, and the same to you, yours, and all your nice listeners as we enter 2016. And I'm deciding now whether it's too early for me to hide under the bed because of all the terrible things that are going to happen this year.
Well, let's go back a little bit to one of the things that happened just at the end of last year, and that is a story that actually came to my attention because of your website, the story of the Muslim taxi driver who refused to let a woman ride in the front seat with him.
Yes, he's crazy. But so is the judge crazy. So is the cop who arrested him crazy. So is the woman who made the complaint crazy. Let me explain. If you want to have a living hell in life, what you do is you get into a dispute with a New York City cab driver, and then you come back weeks later at your own expense to face him or her in a courtroom, which is insane. I mean, absolutely insane. So nobody does that to start off with. But here's what happened. So the lady gets into the cab, and she sits next to the driver, which is not unusual. Some people like to sit up front. Certainly people who, let's say, get car sick, you know? There's always somebody in every family that gets car sick. They want to sit. So it's no big deal. The cab driver turns to her and says, "You can't sit next to me because I'm a Muslim and you're a lady, female." To which the cab, to the lady says, basically, "What the hell are you talking about?" And he says, "Oh, no, no, I'm very religious, and you can't sit next to me." So right away, you had two stupid people, because she should have just gotten out of the cab and said, this guy's crazy. And what he should have done, the cab driver, is he should have just, I don't know, driven off or something. I mean, it was a whole thing. But any event, so she makes the complaint and goes to court, and the judge fines the cab driver. I don't remember offhand. I think I told you, like, $350 or something?
$350, yep.
Yeah, fines him. So, I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. So, you know, New York City is probably the world's largest Muslim city that's not in a Muslim country. I mean, we got wall-to-wall Muslims here. We got a gazillion Muslims working in our garage. So I started to do a little survey, you know, to find out, including a couple of mullahs, the good guys, as to whether or not there's any sense in a Muslim saying he can't sit next to a lady. Now, remember, he wasn't touching her, holding her hand, kissing, hugging, or anything. She's next to him. I mean, his job is driving, her job is sitting. I can't find anybody. Now, maybe you got one in your neck of the woods who'll tell you that's a mortal sin. But I doubt it. I think that's a strange interpretation of a religious beliefs. But as I say, everybody who was involved in this little caper is crazy.
And the thing I don't understand about the story, which I find very odd, is there are extreme cases if someone is extremely religious and the woman, say, was scantily dressed, which was not the case. She was with her husband and two kids. All the other three were in the back seat. I don't understand why the husband just couldn't swap seats with the wife if there was an issue. Or, as you say, he drive off, or they get out and find another cab. It's much ado about everything.
I'm just being the devil's advocate by saying it, because I always, as a kid, used to get car sick, so I had to sit in the front. But no, you're right. I mean, it's an example of a strange case and really not adequate reporting. But the thing that was encouraging to me, you know, you hear this story all the time, bad Muslims, good Muslims. I guess I only spoke to the good Muslims who said, why is the cab driver making a big deal? Because there's no relationship. And by the way, to be an equal opportunity complainer here, let me point out to you that Orthodox Jewish women get themselves in the same situation. As a matter of fact, if you got a bunch of Jewish people who are going to the Catskills for the weekend, doesn't that sound nice? You will have the men sit on one side of the bus, and the women sit on the other side of the bus. You know, they're separated by a curtain.
Right.
And that's people they're related to. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm the original woman's libba, because after all, I own two. I have a wife and a daughter, right?
Okay, yes.
No, but I mean, you know, it's you got to come to grips with your religious beliefs sometimes.
Absolutely. Now, talking about women, I understand there's a story about a woman who failed 6 times the physical test to become a member of the Fire Department of New York City.
Okay, the Obama administration came out with a ruling, which I don't necessarily disagree with, that the New York City Fire Department is the most racist department in the country, fire department. It discriminates against women, and it discriminates against black people, and also Latinos. So the fire department was basically ordered to go out and find some black women. So they did, and they got this one girl, lady, who's on the hook. The only problem is she has failed the physical test 6 times, so they're going to give her another one. And of course, as you can imagine, a lot of people are really crazy about it two ways. Now, remember, they're giving her a physical test, which is a physical test that a fireman has to pass, male, female, black, or green, because, you know, if you need somebody to carry you out of the building, it's kind of tough to be a 5'2" little lady.
Right.
So this time, the fire department, I guess to retaliate against the justice department, has all but said, don't worry, she'll pass this time. She'll pass this time.
So do you feel safer now in New York?
No, I mean, again, it never ceases to amaze me. I guess if I didn't have a nice person like you to talk to, who could I discuss all these insane things? And I'm looking forward to having another fruitful year with you, because, I mean, it must be that 50% of the people are idiots. And I can't believe the fireman's explanation that they can't find suitable black women. That's ridiculous. For the amount of money that they pay in salaries, there's probably a line halfway around Manhattan to get the job.
Okay. Well, we've gone 6 minutes into this discussion, 6 minutes into a brand new year, and we haven't talked about sex. So let's get to that right now, shall
yes.
we? What's the story about sex crimes in the city's subways have soared by nearly 20% in 2015?
Yeah. Now, let me explain that to you. First of all, women are not such little milquetoasts anymore. Maybe once upon a time, if you groped a lady standing next to you in a crowded subway, she wouldn't say anything. Now she'll start screaming and smack you in the head with an iPhone. So that's part of the reasons why the statistics have gone up, because everybody's complaining. And as a matter of fact, they use those same iPhones to take pictures of the guy who did the groping. On the other hand, New York City subways are squashed. I mean, really, you know, when you go into them during rush hour, you're really standing right up against somebody who just ate a garlic pizza. I mean, male or female. So it's almost hard. And, you know, I mean, anytime I go on the subway, and I do, I'm kind of terrified to make sure that I'm keeping my hands, you know, really away from anybody, because I don't want to have an accident. So, but it is happening. There's more of it being reported. And as I say, my gut feeling is a combination. The reporting procedures have gotten better. The women are getting tougher. And, you know, it's kind of very bad behavior. But I will tell you this, Peter. If you ever, you know, are coming to New York City and you don't feel loved, I'd suggest that you go ride the subway during rush hour.
I will give that some consideration. And finally, there was a celebrity sighting that you had. You saw Tom Cruise. Now, when and where did this happen?
No, he's filming a movie in New York, and you would probably be a better expert about that as to what movie is being filmed, because offhand, I don't know. But that comes out of when I give somebody a tour, and that's not meant as a commercial plug, I usually say I can just about guarantee you that we're going to pass someplace today on the streets of New York where somebody is filming a movie. And invariably, it happens all the time, and what I usually do is I pull alongside one of the workers, you know, like carrying the cameras or the sound equipment or something. And I say, what movie are you, you know, putting on? And they'll usually say, such and such a movie. And I'll say, who's it with? And they'll say, Tom Cruise. And then I usually, let's say, if I have a couple of Canadian tourists in the car, I'll say, do you need a couple of, you know, tourists from Canada for bit parts? And, of course, everybody giggles and laughs. In this particular case, it was just a fleeting glimpse of him standing on the street. So I never got a time. Never had the time to find out what he was filming and go through the usual shtick, so to speak.
You should have probably yelled out that you were a Scientologist. You would have come right to the cab.
Yeah, well, he does that. You know, when I saw Ducky, you know who Ducky is.
Ducky from Pretty in Pink?
N-C-I-S.
Oh, Ducky. You mean, okay, that Ducky, because you got to be specific as to which Ducky you're referring
to. Well, I'm trying to make you work hard for your money, because I know you're so good at it.
You're talking about David McCallum.
So I saw him. I said, hey, Ducky! And he said, hello! And I said, how many times has somebody said that to you today? And he said, you're the first.
No, you know, you know what you should have said to him?
What?
Hello, Ilya Kuryakin.
Well, I know. See, you know, nobody. First of all, nobody knows that. Will remember that name probably, and you probably even know how to spell it.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E., my favorite show from when I was a kid.
Yes, right. Well, then you, this is what's it when you're related to somebody who's related to somebody who's related to somebody. You know the guy, who the New York cab driver who spoke to Ilya. So there's a connection in there. 6 points of something or other.
6 degrees of David McCallum.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway, sir, thank you very, very much for being on the program with us once again. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is www.gabby.com. They could also send you an email to peter@gabby.com. And as he mentioned earlier, you do give out some really great tours. So that's something people can always check out if they want to go to New York. Thank you very much, sir.
That was nice of you to say that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being on the program, sir.
Okie dokie. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're in the home stretch. It's time for just one more item. Yes, boys and girls, it's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
According to police, 19-year-old Alex Patterson stopped an officer in Rhode Island and asked for directions to Attleboro, Massachusetts. Officer Craig Forget ran a license check on the vehicle Patterson was driving. I asked Mr. Patterson if he knew that the vehicle was stolen, Forget wrote in his report. He told me, yes, I stole it from Coventry. Patterson, he said, told him he just wanted to get out of Rhode Island. Patterson then allegedly tried to escape, ramming the police cruiser as he took off. We also asked Mr. Patterson why he backed into the police vehicle, and he stated that he knew it had a push bar and could take it, according to court documents. Patterson was charged with unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle, reckless operation, assault and battery on a police officer, assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, resisting arrest, receiving a stolen motor vehicle, and destruction of property over $250. He also had three outstanding arrest warrants. Now, it'll be a while before he can get out of Rhode Island, apparently. So why, oh why, if you have multiple arrests against you and you're driving a stolen vehicle, would you stop a police officer to ask directions out of town? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0333. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0333. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.